Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I say Baltimore Positives in the corner, but we've changed this all out. Don Moeller is here, former Baltimore County Executive, doing the Zoom thing. I got the split screen. How are you?
I feel like an airplane pilot or something. You know, I'm living in Zoom world.
Well, we're making the shift, I would say here, and certainly the city of Baltimore has made a shift, and as well as my hair and my hat and the Oriole thing, and I'm wearing that for you in this deep, long-lost season of lost baseball. But it's been a little while since we got together, a couple weeks since we've talked about the election. I think the last time we talked, the election was in chaos the morning after the election in First District, and we're going to count ballots. We have a winner now, and Brandon Scott is going to be, he is mayor-elect, even though he had less than 50,000 votes, less than 30% of the electorate. But this is the way elections work in Baltimore. There is no second place. He will be the mayor in November, correct?
He will be the mayor. He'll be the mayor. He'll take office in December. And I think we learned a couple of things. And I think Brandon's, I think the vote total is a bit deceptive, that when folks would look and say, well, he got just under 30% of the vote. But I think when you add, I mean, clearly he would have gotten, I don't think there's any debate, he would have gotten the bulk of the other votes in a runoff election. So he would have gotten Mary's votes. He would have gotten Theroux's votes. He would have gotten TJ's votes.
Well, perhaps he would get those in November, right?
Perhaps. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the election you know, it's, I love elections, and I wish, you know, I think anybody that steps up, whether they be an independent or a Republican, to run should be applauded. It's not easy. You thought about it. You toyed with it. It is. I've got folks calling me all the time. I'm going to meet with a fine young gentleman in a week or two who wants to talk about getting involved in Howard County politics. So I applaud people who think about getting involved in elected office. And I wish Brandon all of the best. But as I said, I think his support will be much broader than people think. And I think for him, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to hit the ground running and really begin to turn the corner in Baltimore City. It's interesting, Nestor. I'm trying, as everyone is around the country, to decide if this moment in United States history is truly different. You know, we've said things were going to be different before, but this may be a moment that is truly different.
This may be the good thing that comes out of Trump, right? That it's so repulsive, so repugnant in a Hitler way, that it doesn't come back, that finally 50 years after George Wallace and Robert Kennedy and JFK and Martin Luther King, that I was born in the fall of 68, right? So you remember the summer of 68. I was in my mother's womb, right? So I have not experienced anything like this, but you'd like to think that this has been so repulsive over 3.5 years. We've had a pandemic, some semblance of an internal civil war here, certainly a psychological cold war that's going on that has spilled over into sports and into the NFL this week, right? Literally with Steve Bisciotti, right?
We'll talk about that Raven video, which I think is classic. I've watched it now 2 or 3 times. And I was, you know, just blown away by the sensitivity. And according to all of my contacts, that was directly a response to the owner saying, we're going to do something. We are going to stand up and do this. And Nestor, you can talk about this really better than anyone, because I want you to take us back to that day in London, which you uniquely are positioned to do, amidst the Kaepernick brouhaha and the tenor of the country that was really reflected in a lot of the anger that ended up being directed at you by some listeners and certainly some sponsors. So refresh people's memory about that moment for you and your wife in London.
Well, the moment wasn't then. The moment happened. I have to do the time check on it. Maybe like Saturday morning, I was in London and saw that the SOB comment came out of an Alabama hate rally that he's apparently going to fire up in Tulsa again this week. I saw that and looked on. I mean, I always give you a hard time about working in the world of PR and PRing it up and wagging the dog politically. And I think anybody that hasn't seen Wag the Dog should go check that out, because it feels like the last 3.5 years, I felt like it was, you know, Politico's call it a dog whistle, right?
Or whatever. I'm going to put my spin doctor hat on one day for you. Like, you bring hats out. Somebody gave me a spin doctor hat somewhere along the way.
Well earned.
Wear that in honor of you one day.
Well earned. Well earned. But I would say this, I saw it well before the knee happened, where this thing was going. I'm going to have Marvin Lewis on later on in the week. I reached to Mike Tomlin, Marvin Lewis, and people who coached through that period of time. And Marvin told me some stories about where he was. I think he was in Oakland or someplace. I mean, they played like the 4 o'clock games. I mean, the Ravens had the unique position of playing earliest in the morning, right? So it was a first mover, and it was in London, and the game was so horrifically poor on the field that all that happened at 9:30 in the morning. I was in family mode, Don. I mean, on a personal level, you know, Niels had come over from Germany on that Saturday. We were in Trafalgar Square. We were eating fish and chips and drinking stout and having a good time with Ravens fans and running around London on that Saturday. But, I mean, all the teams and every head coach would tell you this. Every chaplain would tell you this. Every PR person, certainly. Every Kevin Byrne would tell you that – that Saturday was a pretty seminal moment for all of these organizations. If you remember, Mike Tomlin came up with the "we're not going to go out of the locker room," but Villanueva did. Jerry Jones came up with the "y'all take a knee, I'm firing your ass." So they all had a thing, right? They all had a message. And, you know, Marvin had to figure it out. Mike Brown was freaked out about it, didn't want the guys kneeling. Some owners decreed there shall not be kneeling. Some of them were thinking about their Northrop Grumman sponsorships and their flyovers or their sponsors. Not many of them thought, like, I have African-American players. I wonder how they feel about this, being called SOBs by this racist POS who runs the country. I'm over in London. I woke up in the morning. I took a knee on the subway at probably 6 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time, right? I mean, I was at the stadium 3 hours before, 4 hours before kickoff. So it was the afternoon there, right? So the kickoff there was at 3:30 in the afternoon. I was at the stadium by 11 in the morning. I probably took a knee at 5 in the morning. If you look at my post, I took a knee at the Wembley station early in the morning. So I took a knee 5 hours before the football players did, Don. So I took a knee in the press box. I don't know if anybody ever took a picture of me. Luke was next to me, and Luke was very like, "Hey, dude, you know, I don't know." You know, I'm like, I always do the right thing long before it's considered the right thing. The correct thing, I should say, not the left thing. But so that day, it happened. Twitter happened. I got fired by 3 of my clients at halftime when the game was whatever it was, 31-0. I don't even know the score. Whatever, it was a terrible game. After the game, I went down into the locker room, which, by the way, Don, you talk about a free society and free media. If you cover soccer at Wembley, you don't go in the locker rooms. There's no locker room access for media reporters in soccer. So the locker rooms aren't really designed, A, for football pads, for giant human beings. They're not designed. They're designed for soccer players to put on their shoes and bring their gym bag in. And only 20 of them, not 80 of them. So the locker room's a mess. The locker room was Towson University 1988 football.
I was going to say, not Towson University as it is today.
No, designed right for Dundalk Community College in the 80s, right? So I went down in this locker room, and everybody's crowded, and they've gotten their asses kicked. I mean, Harbaugh stood in front of a thing and said it was an embarrassment. Whatever he said,
we agree, right? The worst performance in Ravens history, certainly under Coach Harbaugh, but probably in the franchise history, the worst performance.
There was never a time, even under Mark Schubert, where they went out and got embarrassed because Vinny could still go out and throw four touchdowns.
Right.
I mean, they never got shellacked in like that. And I mean, even the bad moments of the Billick administration, like in Detroit, they didn't lose 51-3, right?
No, they just committed 800 penalties.
Right. Whatever the frustration was and the embarrassment and the fact that 20,000 fans were there and all the sponsors were there and everyone was drunk, right? Because it was 8 o'clock at night there, right? Like literally when this is going down, I went in the locker room and I went locker to locker, Don. I went to Matt Judon's locker, Levine, Mosley, all the African-American players took a knee and I said, my people came off a boat. I'm an immigrant, you know, and I see what this guy's doing, this racist creep is doing across the pond, and you guys are taking on heat. I just want to know that I kneeled with you to stand with you, and I went locker to locker. The Flacco side of the locker room, the Morgan Cox side of the locker room, the right side politically of the locker room didn't say much. There wasn't much to say after they lost the way they did. They wanted to focus on football. Joe Flacco said, I didn't even see who took a knee or why. No speaky. You know, there was a lot of no speaky going on because speakeying was the worst thing you could do in the aftermath, right? Like you had to take a side. You couldn't say, well, they're good people on both sides at that time. I took my side and I took my medicine and, you know, I had a sponsor screw me on a $12,500 deal that they never paid because I did a business on a handshake. So that one day that story will be told. But all these years later, we now have Roger Goodell doing videos, right? Like we were wrong. And now we have Steve Bisciotti coming out with the Black Lives Matter. And certainly Steve Bisciotti came closer to signing Colin Kaepernick than anyone. And all of this was born from Colin Kaepernick. And quite frankly, Don, I mean, I've just wasted 8 minutes of oxygen on Wembley. Let's be honest. If anyone else were the president of the United States, if Chris Christie were the president, if John Kasich were the president, if Mitt Romney were the president, if Jeb Bush were the president, if any of these people were the president, this would never have happened. And 30,000 people would have never have stopped going to Ravens games. And Colin Kaepernick began under Obama, so I can start with that. I'll give you all the oxygen you want. You asked me about my experience. So I just told you, you know?
No. I appreciate it. I think it's important, and I think it's an important part of the history lesson, Nestor, because I think when you share that story, and again, what year was that?
It was September 17 or 18?
17.
It was 2.5 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, almost 3 years ago that we're talking about. And it's remarkable what has transpired and where we are today. Because I think what always got lost in the translation, what Kaepernick, the statement that he was trying to make, was people were having difficulty, and certainly this is what Drew Brees, who by all accounts is a great guy, it's what he ran into recently when he tried to articulate respect for the flag versus the kneeling. And I think as people tried to divide that baby, they never grasped the key issue that Kaepernick was trying to draw attention to, which was this issue of, we have a systemic racist issue in the United States of America. And as a result of that systemic racism, African Americans and people of color are endangered. And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, it's 400 years, but because of recent tragic events, it appears that the bulk of the American people, Democrat, Republican, independent, fat, old, short, tall, other than those few folks who will cling to the Confederacy until the day they die, I mean, that's just who they are, but I truly believe they're
in the minority. It really is amazing in America that somebody would cling to the Confederate flag more than the American flag. Like that to me seems so, and again, Don, you know, my mother who passed away, who you read over her funeral, her uncle has literally, you know, a statue and a plaque in the square in Abbeville, South Carolina, that I believe, who the woman that played Pretty Woman, Jessica, what's her name?
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. Who played Pretty Woman?
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts. The movie Sleeping with the Enemy. Remember the movie? It was filmed in Abbeville, South Carolina. And Julia Roberts spoke out about the Confederacy and how many miles. This is 30 years ago, right?
Listen, Nestor, my grandmother was, on my mother's side, was a proud lady of the South. She grew up in Richmond. She loved Richmond. Like you, I love fried chicken. I love batter bread cooked in a cast iron frying pan on the stove. I love black-eyed peas. I can do all of that. I can do all of that and respect those parts of her Southern heritage, and at the same time say that if you fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War, you were a traitor. That if you were Robert E. Lee and you were Jefferson Davis, you were trying to destroy the United States of America. And as recent documentaries have shown, as effective as Ulysses S. Grant was, it may, in historical terms, be proven that he was actually too generous, that we didn't destroy the myth of the South, which then had a rebirth during Reconstruction and Jim Crow, the Jim Crow era, where we tried to create this sort of romantic narrative that it was all about an agrarian economy. No, folks.
The truth is, it's about To Kill a Mockingbird. To Kill a Mockingbird is the truth, right?
Right. It was about Atticus Finch, and it's about Jim saying, stand up, children, your father's passing. It's about doing the right thing, and all of those monuments and all that silliness and the flag. It's time to listen. I think about my friend Kevin Kamenetz often, and I remember the day when he walked into my office and he said, and we had struck this deal with the city to take over this gorgeous park out off of Falls Road. You probably have been there many times. It was called Robert E. Lee Park. And we city wasn't in a position to take care of it. It was in total disrepair. So the county said, look, it's in the county. Let us take it over. We'll take care of it like we take care of our parks, and it'll be wonderful. But Kevin said, we're not going to call it Robert E. Lee Park. And he took incredible criticism from people when he said, you know, I don't care what the deed says. You know, we don't need to change the name in the deed, but in terms of Baltimore County, we're going to call it Lake Rowland. There's a lake there, and that's what we're going to call it, and we're not going to call it Robert E. Lee Park. And slowly, people began to come around, but we have these, Nestor, in the past 2 months, just think about what we've seen. We've seen Aubrey Ahmad hunted down like an animal by guys in a pickup truck and rifles, almost as if we're on a big game hunt in some kind of a preserve. We then have George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds with an officer kneeling on his neck while other officers stand and watch a man murdered. So we think, okay, that certainly is a wake-up call. Thousands and thousands take to the street. Maybe this is the time where we do begin to have a real discussion about what policing looks like. And the next thing we know, a guy falls asleep in a drive-thru because he's drunk and he's running away from the police and they shoot him in the back. Now, I can't comprehend. And when folks talk about and reject the concept of white privilege, and again, some of our listeners aren't going to like this, but if you can't understand what white privilege is when a gentleman falls asleep in a drive-through and is running away from police and gets shot in the back, then you really are missing what's happening in our nation. And I think, listen, and in the midst of this, And in the midst of the Atlanta murder, one of the key advisors to the president of the, I don't even know why I'm laughing because the man is not funny. It just, it makes me scratch my head and count the days until November the 3rd. But Larry Kudlow, the chief economic advisor to the president of the United States, goes on CNBC and says there is no systemic racism in the United States of America. Now, I don't know what to make of that. It's just insanity, Nestor. It's and I hope the people stay in the streets until we get real change in America. And I think we started this whole discussion by saying that I think
we're going to have change in the city, period, right?
Brandon will be in a, right, correct, a unique situation to bring about real change in Baltimore City, because I think, you know, we had Commissioner Harrison on, and Commissioner Harrison couldn't have been clearer. He tried to clean up New Orleans, and he used that term over and over and over again, Nestor, constitutional policing. And I think you and I have been crystal clear, and I say to anyone, listen, I was county executive. I was chief of staff for two county executives. I have the utmost respect for the officers, the men and women of the Baltimore County Police Department. By and large, they are outstanding.
We just had Melissa Hyatt on a couple weeks ago.
I have, outstanding people. I had a cousin who's like a brother to me who went far too soon because of, again, the awful disease of cancer. But he was a major in the Maryland State Police. I had another, I had a second cousin who was a lifelong Baltimore City police officer. I have another cousin who is a corrections officer in the state of Maryland. I have great respect for the men and women of the police department. But, and this is a big but, Nestor, and you've alluded to it, and this but matters. I believe the men and women of police departments all across this nation have been ill-served by the Fraternal Order of Police. Now, some people aren't going to like that, but I will suggest.
Well, you go back and you watch the Joe Crystal stuff, and you at least here in Baltimore, and you say when someone is a whistleblower, which is what you want on the staff, they are the ones excommunicated, right? Like that becomes part of the credo and the creed that sort of perpetuates its own ugliness, to be really honest with you. Like the worst founded thoughts out there about police are then become founded when these incidents happen. And this is why people are in the streets, right? Like, so I don't know that we're ever going to have 100% clean cops, but the 98% that are clean have to be able to point out the 2% that aren't, or whatever that number is. And when that's unavailable because of the union not protecting people, that, and I think a lot of people in America have just thought that's gone on too long. And I don't think any of us believe defunding the police should mean we shouldn't have police, right? Like defunding the police, when I think of horrific left-wing ideas and putting names and an identity to something, defund the police is really, really not a good message in the summer of a national election that needs to be won by Joe Biden in November.
Yeah, I wish it's funny. I was talking to Reverend Hathaway just recently about that topic, and he and I,
by the way, how's his golf game? Is yours better than his? Who won?
Hey, listen, he's a pretty good golfer. I'll tell you that. The Reverend hits it pretty darn good. But we were talking, and he's actually going to write an article. I think he's starting up a column in the Baltimore Post, and he's going to write an article about what defund the police means. And I think he and I both agreed that, you know, when you're an activist, you're not always thinking about the messaging of what you're trying to communicate. And I think as people begin to talk about it, they're going to quickly recognize that defund the police doesn't mean we're doing away with police departments across the country. If the topic becomes that, should we take a look at what police officers do and are asked to do and what they shouldn't be asked to do and maybe adjust our funding? I think, again, the bulk of the Americans, other than that few who cling under a rock, who continue to think they should be walking the streets with AK-47s. Listen, I've said it probably 10 times on Baltimore Positive. There were 30% of the American public that supported Joe McCarthy at the beginning of the McCarthy terror back in the 50s. When it was all over and he was disgraced and run out of town, 30% still supported Joe McCarthy. So that 30% is going to be.
And they
there.
Taught their grandkids how to support George Wallace and Richard Nixon, who taught their grandkids how to support Ronald Reagan. And right. I mean, so that's just kind of the perpetuation of how you get to Donald Trump. I mean,
why Trump is so dangerous and why you and I rail against his presidency, whether people like it or not, quite frankly, is that he's tried to make it okay. And I'll tell you, we had a big discussion in our family over the weekend, and we sort of had a split decision on
how many
this.
Democrats, Republicans, when you get 40 people in a room at the mall, because there are a lot of Mueller's, dude. I mean, I've met every one of your
right.
cousins, but what's the percentage politically? Because I sense that you have like some younger people that are part of the Alex Keaton Young Republicans Club, right?
It's a mix, I guess, if you were to say, if I was trying to say in my immediate family, they're obviously all Democrats. But if I take the somewhat extended Mueller family, it's probably 60% Democrats, 40%.
There is a healthy debate. There would have been a lot of support for John Kasich on your side.
I was going to say, most of
well,
the.
Well, you and I voted for Bob Ehrlich back before we knew what we were doing, right?
I did. Right? I say this publicly. I'd like to have that vote back. But and I like Bob personally.
I walked up to Bob 6 months ago and I told him, I said, you're putting kids in cages and defending that, and your wife's out, right, you know, right, holding up Trump stuff. I'm not, and I love Joe Slifka, but he's wrong. And
yeah, I'm not sure why Bob made that choice. But the debate that we had over the weekend, and it'd be interesting, I'll ask you where you come down on this, and maybe people will chime in on social media, has to do with when Trump originally scheduled the rally in Tulsa on Juneteenth, one of the most revered days for African Americans across the nation. Listen, I was privileged for years to attend Juneteenth ceremonies in Baltimore County in a official capacity. So the discussion that we had was, now he's moved it to the day after. He probably should move it a week, but since they celebrate pretty much all weekend. But listen, I'll take moving it a day is at least awareness of something. The discussion was, did Donald Trump and his team, when they scheduled the rally on the 19th, did they know it was Juneteenth and do it anyway?
Or were they oblivious
to even what Juneteenth was? And before I tell you the breakdown in our family, where do you come down on that?
Of course they knew.
Okay. See, I'm on the other side, believe it or not. We were split about 50-50. You reacted the way I won't say who in the family, but a number of family members said, of course they knew. He did it to make a statement. I believe
both answers
are bad.
When you break down Donald Trump, the cruelty is always the point. So, you know, I think Adam Server got that right at the Atlantic a couple years ago. You know, like when you break it down, whatever the worst thing is, that's what they'll do. That's what he'll do. That's been the history of it. I've never seen one word of love, conciliatory, forgiveness, hope, you know, these ideals, integrity, you know, learning, gratitude. I've never seen any of these ideals that I hold sacred to be a part of. It would seem, in the sort of old school Sicilian way, it would be a sign of weakness to be kind.
That gene does not exist. I mean, enough people have written. I mean, I'm small potatoes. I've probably written 3 different blogs about his lack of empathy gene. I mean, that part is not there. And that part, as you know, what
I don't think it's a lack of empathy. I think it's the exact opposite. I think there's some Hitler-y sort of the cruelty is the point.
Well,
that is the personality. It's not about being kind. It's not about being neutral, right? Neutral love and hate, that's indifference. It's about the joy of inflicting cruelty. Obvious part of his personality that I find revolting. Deplorable, to borrow Hillary Clinton's words. So I think that part of it would lend itself to belief. Sure, you know, whatever the cruelest thing is possible, that he'll pick that box. And it also, there's also the narcissism of having the attention. If the thing was on June 21st, it wouldn't be a talking point. What can we do to make it the worst talking point possible to show how awful we are? We'll do it that day. And so, come on.
No, I agree with everything you just said. As a matter of fact,
is it possible he didn't know what Juneteenth is? Sure. Is it possible the dozen people around him that would do this, or the people that booked the arena, or the all of that, or the people? Yeah, I would think do it anyway was the order from headquarters.
Yeah, see, I can. But I can imagine that Stephen Miller has never heard of Juneteenth. But having said that, it's why I continue to believe that the comparison that the American public is ready to make is, I think they're starting to embrace, polls will change a million times, but I think they're starting to embrace what you just said, is that they're seeing a narcissistic, mean, ugliness about this man that
is led into the streets.
They just say, man, we can't do this anymore. So, hey, Nestor, before we start to move on and get out of here, I have to ask you, because you and I, anybody who's listened to us, know that we've had a lively disagreement about the Orioles over the years. I was, and there you go, you got
something
the hat
magic
on. I am extremely frustrated with ownership right now.
I bet you are.
Than the players. I think it's amazing, you've written about it, that they're going to be the only sport to not get it. I really, you're going to have to tell me what makes them tick. But were you encouraged by the announcement that the Stadium Authority and the Angelos boys were publicly saying they're going to engage in talks to get this thing done?
Well, that's what you do. I mean, that's how you open it up. And then you say, I want X and I'll give you Y.
Step
and
one.
What
right.
other options do we have? I mean, if you think they haven't been on the phone with somebody in Nashville trying to figure it out and playing the number up in New York. And look, everyone tells me the owners would never allow them to leave. I don't think you know the owners well enough. And if you've watched this week, whatever makes them the most money or screws the players the most or creates value for them. There are a large number of owners who don't want to play this year. I would think the Angelos guys are in that subset. By the way, for you, Don, I have created a 45-minute segment with Marty Conway earlier that you can find out in our audio vault.
Wow.
So Marty will teach you all you need to know. That's why I go to
As
experts.
You know, I will go listen to that immediately.
I know
because
you will.
Anybody who has not listened to Marty Conway chat with Nestor, it's some of the best radio.
Well, forget what I think about it. Just go ask Marty what he thinks. So that, to me, Marty gave me five thoughts in that piece that would be, you know, things that I would just parrot back to you right now. Made me sound smart, but it's
Marty.
Well,
give me the four dummies version as to why some owners don't want to play.
Because you can't make money without fans. I mean, it's still designed, unlike the NFL, that's designed around television, that they can still make money from their television package. Baseball really sells hot dogs, sells things, creates commerce, tax, all of that. That was promised when you build them a stadium. That's another segment. Well, Don, I promise you, we'll have plenty of time to talk about baseball when they're not playing baseball, right? So, hey, man, I appreciate you, and I appreciate all your support on the togetherness thing. For anybody out there, I've released – you know, I'm going to do another segment with you about the sincerity, which you know that I put a platform together that will people will be reading my thoughts about crime and education and hearing it, because we're going to use the summer to do what I was going to do if I ran or didn't run, which is educate ourselves, talk more about urban development, talk about public housing, talk about all of these issues that Brandon Scott's going to have to deal with, whoever the mayor is going to be, Bob Wallace, they're going to have to deal with it, right?
Well, as you know, I would say to anyone, and again, we're brutally honest on here. We agree, we disagree, but we give our thoughts. And anyone who thinks that your motivation has been anything other than to want a better city. I mean, you grew up in the county, but near the city line. You've lived in the city for a long, long time. You and Jen love the city. You're a Baltimore City guy. You are rooting for Brandon to be successful. And there it is, the city map right behind you. And yeah, when you talked about, you know,
young kids made this. I got this at Baltimore Homecoming last year. And we talked about what Baltimore Positive has meant to me, meeting cool people. You know what I mean? The people that put on Baltimore Homecoming last year, we went this is right just to the east of Penn Station. There's a beautiful community center there that I went and toured, and young people make these, and they gave it to me as a gift. I took, if you see in the poster there, my little I voted sticker I put on there up in the northeast. That's an homage to Brandon Scott there in Mary Washington. That's their district.
Well, Brandon, we wrap up by saying that, you know, Brandon's a young guy, and I think he's got a bright future. He ran as Zurawick and others. He really did run a terrific campaign. He came on strong at the end. Events seemed to just sort of crystallize in his favor. But I would say to folks that, you know, while you toyed with a run, you're going to be part of the conversation going forward because you care about the city. You're going to be talking about important issues, and we're going to be talking with important people. It's Baltimore Positive.
Baltimore Positive. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive, for him and myself and us. We hope to find you at Baltimore Positive, of course, and WNST.net, even though we're using Zoom and don't have our Chiron. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, calm, local, even though it doesn't say here, and Baltimore Positive.
We didn't give a shout out to our sponsors.
Oh, we got to say hello to Taharka. By the way, I want to show you this. This is the empty key lime pie that smell that. It smells like key lime pie. So, yes, there we go. Taharka, yes, give them major love.
I gave a pint away the other day to my aunt and uncle, and he called and said, "You got to be kidding me." I mean, he couldn't believe how great it is. But all our great State Fair is killing it. They've reopened. They're, you know, you were just there. They're outside.
Chicken and
they're
waffles
inside.
The other day.
Fadley's, great stuff. The seafood, the crab cakes coming to Catonsville soon. State Fair opening up a Mexican restaurant soon. And somehow Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtor, they're
still selling
more homes, listing more homes than ever in the midst of a pandemic. So we thank all of our sponsors and our friends at Center of Maryland who continue to be great supporters of Baltimore Positive.
Oh, don't forget our friends at Thread too. So go to Thread.org and learn more.
Thread, more important than ever. Sarah Heminger and the incredible work that they're doing at Thread. It's going to take everybody to put this city and this nation back together. It's going to be groups like Thread that get it done.
I'm on it. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Baltimore Positive, Towson, Baltimore.